we present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Once again, it's My Music and the Fearful Foursome. In other words, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden competing in musical knowledge against John Amis and Frank Muir. Everything, they tell us, must have a beginning and an end. In this first round, we hear some beginnings and endings. The question is, though, what comes in between? Ian Wallace, you first. What begins like this? And ends like this. Ian.
Well, I don't think it's the Messiah.
But you're warm.
But I would have thought it was probably Mr. Handel.
Yes.
The fireworks.
Yes, Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks, first heard in 1749 in Green Park in London. Of course, everything went wrong, as you probably remember, Ian, and they set fire to the whole of the park. I mean, as you remember from broadcast you've given on this sort of subject.
No, I don't remember that, but I do remember there was a terrible jam on the escalator at Green Park Station after that.
Dennis, what begins like this?
I feel like I'm not out of bed yet.
And ends like this.
Well, I think anybody who's keen on film musicals will remember that opening shot of On the Town, that wonderful long shot where you pick out the dock worker who was wearing a kind of red hat, singing, I feel like I'm not out of bed yet.
Yes.
And then it finishes with the fresh lot of sailors coming up the ship and singing, New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
It's a hell of a town, the last line we heard there. Leonard Bernstein's music for On the Town. That was the part of the original London cast recording, one mark to Dennis. John Amis, what begins like this? And ends like this.
It's the Fourth Symphony of Johannes Brahms.
Which movement? Well, it's a fair enough question, because the Fourth Symphony doesn't begin like that.
Oh, beg your pardon, no, it's the last movement.
The last movement, yes.
I thought it was going to be one of those questions like, you know, take Wagner, how old was he?
No, you're right. The last movement of Brahms' Fourth Symphony, marked to you. Frank Muir, your turn. What begins like this? And ends like this.
First was a coronation where a page stepped on the train. And the last one was either a rapidly closed train window of Brief Encounter.
Good, it's a good guess, but it wasn't.
Or was the slap of a guillotine?
No, not a guillotine, but along those lines. It was an axe.
An axe?
Hmm. There was a slight clue for you. At the beginning, we had some typical film, period film music, and then laughter. There was some laughter in the first scene, and I remember quite distinctly this film beginning with a sort of party atmosphere before before the host was summoned to see his monarch.
Who got chopped on?
Begins in Chelsea, ends further downriver.
Sir Thomas More.
Yes, and the film title...
A Man of All Seasons.
A Man of Four Seasons.
Or Four Seasons, is it?
Very difficult tonight. I helped you, but I think he got it, don't you, for a mark? Yes, he got it for a mark. Robert Bolt's A Man for All Seasons. One of the greatest of all lyric writers in the popular song field is Johnny Mercer. Think of Laura, Blues in the Night, Moon River, that old Black Magic, marvellous songs. He seems to be able to incorporate any word and find any rhyme for it if it's necessary. His questions are all based on Johnny Mercer's songs. Ian, you first. How did Johnny Mercer work in a reference in the song to Webster's Dictionary?
Oh. I look to my partner for help here.
You're just too much. You're just too very, very to ever be in Webster's Dictionary.
Or like, you know, just, like the road film.
No, that's well, not, they that's, didn't write that.
It's not Johnny Mercer, no. That was Van Heusen and Burke. Mm-hmm. Like Webster's Dictionary, We're Morocco Bound.
Oh, yes, just too marvellous.
Ian's question, but
his
partner Dennis got it, and that's the answer. In fact, this is how Ella Fitzgerald sings that bit.
You much, you much, and just you.
Well, she sings it well, too.
Yes. She does it quite well.
No better than you, Dennis. You gave a marvellous and casual interpretation of it there.
Dennis, your turn. How did Johnny Mercer work Aurora Borealis into a song?
Aurora
Borealis, or Alice.
Your lips are like a red and ruby chalice.
That's right.
Your lips.
Dennis, shall I give you the mark and then we'll hear Ella sing it?
It's called the clouds are like an alabaster. It's called The Midnight Sun. I could see the Midnight
Music
Sun.
By Lionel Hampton, Midnight Sun. Here's Ella demonstrating those lines.
Your lips were like a red and ruby chalice, warmer than the summer. The clouds were like an alabaster palace, rising to a snowy eye. Each star its own aurora borealis, suddenly you held me tight.
Yes.
And I could see.
I could see the midnight sun, yes. John Amos, what rhymes with kindergarten in a Johnny Mercer lyric? Kindergarten. Frank may be able to help.
Kind of pardon?
No. No. It's in the song, You Must Have Been a Beautiful Baby.
Must be a beautiful baby. Must be a beautiful baby.
When?
When you were only starting.
That's it. Yes, when you were only starting to go to kindergarten, I bet you drove the other kids wild. Half a mark out of one, because I had to give you the title there. Frank, your turn. Can you give the Mercer rhyme for underwater life?
Underwater life? Fecunda sort of wife.
Ian He was not capable of that. he did it in a song called Spring, Spring, Spring.
The beehives are buzzing.
Budding.
A budding son and daughter life.
That's it, you got it. Yes, it's a beehive, a budding son and daughter life. Every family has plans in view. Even down in the brook, the underwater life is forever blowing bubbles, too.
I must say that you've got a half line. It's a beehive of... A budding son and daughter life doesn't stand on its own.
No, it just faintly contrived.
It's a prelude, but it's not the fugue.
No, that's true enough. And, of course, Johnny Mercer knows something any lyric writer knows. If you have a slightly dubious rhyme, you put it first, and then the good one later, don't you? On to the next round. Some time ago in this series, I mentioned my close friendship with the pianist Rubinstein, Horace Rubinstein, who plays favourite items on the piano, but always seems to get them just slightly wrong. So, Ian, what would you say is wrong with Horace's interpretation of the most famous of Tchaikovsky's piano concertos? Listen. Need I play more?
Mm. Not really, no. a tendency to not lift the hands up, having got to the bottom of the phrase, but then climbed up again.
Yes, yes, that's true enough. Mark to you. Dennis, my friend Horace was glad to welcome the revival in the popularity of Scott Joplin, but he made a slight error in Joplin's most famous composition. Can you detect the error?
Too fast.
it's sort of taken the itch out of the sting in a strange way. I can't put my... You mustn't put your finger on it. It doesn't get better.
I can't give you the mark. It should have been... Instead of... a B instead of a C.
There you go.
John Amos. Horace Rubinstein's Moonlight Sonata received acclaim. It was actually acclaim from the Beethoven Protection Society. This is how Horace played his Moonlight Sonata. Not easy to do. Well, it sounds rather nice, actually, like that.
Yes.
Where did he go wrong?
As Michael Flanders might say in one of his songs, it ought to please any passing sloth, because he's playing it upside down.
An Antipodean version. That's not. It should have been da-da-dum instead of da-da-dum. That's right. The triplets were inverted. Frank Muir, in his lighter moments, Horace Rubinstein was greatly addicted to the melodies of Ivan Novello. This was his version of Someday My Heart Will Awake. What was it that went wrong?
It's down, pum, 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 yes. Pum, pum, pum. Come in, Ginger. Dan Buster.
Yes, Dan Buster's march. That's right. If a motorist has a car registration number of which he's particularly fond, gentlemen, he can have it transferred to a new car on payment of a modest fee. The car license people call them cherished numbers. I know that Petula Clark, Pet Clark, has, or maybe had, the registration PET1, Pet 1. All of which leads me to ask if you can think of a suitable cherished number for a musician to have, be he singer, composer, instrumentalist, or whatever. The letter I, of course, can count as 1 or naught as O. It's up to you. Ian, you're the sufferer because you're first. Any ideas? A cherished number for a musical person.
You could imagine some very lively conductor like Antal Dorati, or a very lively composer like Rossini, on the basis that the letter 1 could also stand for ace, and you would have VIV1, which could stand for Vivace.
Vivace. Oh, that's clever. Oh, I like it.
Yes, but the trouble is nobody looking at it on the road, where they would just say that's VIV1.
Very nice, though. I get you a mark, I think, certainly. Dennis, you had a little longer to think about it.
I did. Actually, I just thought of one on the basis of Ian's, because if that same lively conductor didn't bother to look at the music at all. Didn't even bother to take it with him. He could have a number, NO20, which is no score.
Oh, yeah. No, That would be for Beecham, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the one I had, two, one was for Johann Strauss, who could have a very simple number, just 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And Vincent Eumanns and Irving Caesar could have a very short number plate. What would that be, Steve?
Oh, Eumanns and Caesar? I can't think.
They wrote quite a bit. T42.
Oh, of course. Oh, lovely, yes. I should have thought of that, shouldn't I? Yes. T42, that's lovely. John Amis, what's in your mind on this subject?
Well, any good musician would adore the works of Mozart. And the works of Mozart don't go in opus numbers, but in K numbers, mm-hmm. standing for Kirchhoff, the man who catalogued them. Therefore, if you were dishing one out to Yehudi Menuhin, say, you'd give him one of the violin concertos, K219.
Yes.
Was a pianist, you'd give him K488, perhaps, the A major. And if it perhaps was a musician that you didn't really like quite so much, you might give him K620, which is Mozart's Requiem.
Good idea, those Ks, yes. Sure. Frank, any ideas?
Yes, for Yehudi Menuhin, I would have thought V10L1N.
Oh, yeah. V-I-O-L-I-N. Lovely, yes.
But, or if there's a member of the London Philharmonic touring France, the wind section, he might have C-0-R-G-B. You got there, didn't
very
you?
Nice.
Cor Anglais.
Yes, yes.
One for you, Steve.
Oh, no.
What about if the, on the back of the bus, the number plate was BAT0N?
Yes.
It means as a conductor.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Another one for you, Steve.
Oh, yes, right.
Can you see any reason why Wagner could have the number 9W.
9W? No, I was thinking of R1NG, but 9W, what's that?
That's in case anybody says, do you spell your name with a V?
Nine. Fair enough. 9W. You've all got a mark in that round, why not? It's time we turned our attention to opera. Ian, cast your mind back to 1951. On December the 1st that year, there was an important premiere at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. First performance of a very open-air kind of opera. Ian, what was the opera and where does its action take place?
This is Billy Budd.
Yes, that's right. And where does the action take place? And don't say at sea.
I was just about to say in a ship.
Could you hazard the name?
Indomitable.
Indomitable. That's good for you, HMS Indomitable, during the French Wars of 1797. 2 marks to Ian Wallace. Benjamin Britten's Billy Budd, first performance. Dennis, apart from Britten's usual librettist, 2 famous literary people had a hand in the story and the libretto. Can you name them? A mark each. Billy Budd.
No, I can name one, obviously, because Billy Budd was originally a short novel by Herman Melville.
Yes, the Moby Dick man.
I don't know what other famous...
One mark.
Wait a minute, don't give up the ship, as we say, on Billy Budd.
Least of all, don't give up the ship on a passage to India.
Oh, is it? Oh, then that's the chap that they always... The real literary people always call Morgan Forster. Yes. I've always called E.M. Forster.
E.M. to you, Forster, yep, that's right. Yes, E.M. Forster wrote the libretto, additional work on it by Britain's usual collaborator, Eric Crozier. I gave you a hint, a fairly sizable one, so I think 1.5 out of 2.
Well, I had actually written down Eric Crozier, but when you mentioned Forster, I crossed it. Yes.
No, I did say at the beginning of my question, yes, apart from Britain's usual librettist.
John, tell me a sweet story about a little man who arrived in the Heffers bookshop in Cambridge, wearing bicycle clips and Norfolk jacket and so on, with a complete set of the works of E.M. Forster, signed by the author. So they were quite pleased and they bought them. And about a month later, the same little man turned up with another set of complete works of E.M. Forster, and it was some time before they twigged who it was.
John's story. It's your turn now, John. This is the voice of Peter Pears from the very end of the opera. John, what's the name of the character? He gives it in
and
full.
My Captain Edward Fairfax Vere.
That's his name. You did it in your own voice. You usually do Peter Pears' voice. Can we have it in Pears' language, please?
Billy Bob, what up, man?
With a parrot on the shoulder. Yes, why not? Captain Edward Fairfax Vere is the answer that gets you your marks. Frank, what was it in particular that Billy Budd had in common with Mr. Ernest Worthing in another tale?
Was Billy Budd born in a ditty box?
Very nearly. Very nearly. They were both. Yes. What's the word?
Born in a skip or a basket.
No.
They were both basketball.
Yes, they were both, as you were about to say, they were both foundlings.
Yes.
Found? Says Lady Bracknell.
Foundling.
I think you get the marks, and I'll spare you it. This is the moment in the opera when Billy Budd himself mentions the fact.
Don't you worry. Foundling. That's the word. Foundling. I'm a foundling. Found in a basket tied to a good man's door. The poor old man.
You are, as he says, found in a basket tied to a good man's door, the poor old man. So, having disposed of able seaman Bud, we move on to the final round, the music concerning, in this case, other members of the armed forces. I shall be asking Ian Wallace to round things off with a song about a circumnavigator and his percussion instrument. There's something for you to be thinking out, Ian, while I turn to Dennis Norden and ask him to reply first in song. Dennis, Mr. Brown goes to town on the 8:21. But what does he do at the end of the day?
But he comes back every evening and he's
sing
ready
it
with his gun.
do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, when you think old England's done?
Yes, why not? 2 marks. John, can you give us the song of the vagabond Yankee stationed in Butterfliesville?
Yes. Would you like to give me a chord or something?
Yeah, I'll give you a... How about that?
The whole world over, on business or on pleasure, the Yankee travels, scorning all danger. He drops his anchor just where I can't remember.
But I do know that the next line is one of the best in all Puccini operas, which is in the Italian, milk punch or whiskey? You usually hear the singers try and sort of get rid of... So they don't get a titter going round the audience.
You usually give us these things in the original language. Why not in this case?
Well, with Butterfly, I always think of a certain singer who was at Covent Garden in the late 40s and early 50s, a marvellous singer called Walter Midgley, a Yorkshire singer. And he had a very individual way of singing. And he also did one thing in opera which was quite unique. I saw him, I was sitting there, and he was singing the Duke in Rigoletto. And all of a sudden he took a big deep breath and swallowed his moustache.
I've suddenly realised that if I swallow my moustache, I turn myself inside out.
Frank, it's your turn. Remembering, as I said, that all these songs are something to do with members of the armed forces. What, Frank, seems to suit the ladies best?
Oh, a military chef seems to suit the ladies best. There's something about a soldier. There's something about a soldier. There's something about a soldier that is fine, fine, fine.
Yes, indeed, yes. Cicely Muir, that one. And two marks to you. Right, Ian, I turn to my piano. Up there, sleeping there below. You ready with your song?
Let's have a go.
Verse two, perhaps, might be the one to do. Drake, he was a Devon man and ruled the Devon sea. Captain of the sleeping there below. Loving though his death fell, he went with heart at ease, and dreaming all the time of Plymouth Hoe. Take my drum to England, hang it by the shore, strike it when your powder's running low. Is the Don sight Devon, and quit the port of heaven, and drum them up the channel as we drum them long ago.
Lovely from you, unrehearsed from me. Time for us to hit the hammock. Me to tell you that in this edition of My Music, we have a victory by a mere half a mark for John Amis and Frank Muir. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace, and Dennis Moore. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Tony Schreier.